This is Audible.
For my beautiful daughter, Riley, the little girl who grew up to be my best friend.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Box of Butterflies, Discovering the Unexpected Blessings All Around Us by Roma Downey. Read by the author with a foreword written by Della Reese. And read by Riley Anspa.
Hello, I'm Roma's daughter, Riley, and I would like to read the foreword that my godmother, Miss Della Reese, wrote for my mom. Dear readers, my darling Roma has written this very special book called Box of Butterflies. I couldn't be more proud of her, and I delight in sharing it with you. Whether you bought this book as a beautiful gift for yourself or for someone you love, I know you will be truly touched by the spirit that exudes from its pages as Roma shares the beauty of her soul and the sweetness of her spirit. You'll find great warmth and wisdom within. I feel so fortunate to have had Roma in my life for all these years. If you don't already know it, God was the one who brought us together many years ago when we played angels on our beloved television show, Touched by an Angel. The relationship between the angels Tess and Monica was much like the one that developed between Roma and me off camera. Authentic, caring, loving, protective, and true. We are soul sisters, and it is as if we have known each other forever. As you will learn in these pages, she has become my daughter, and I am her mama. I've loved seeing her grow into the beautiful mother, wife, producer, author, and extraordinary woman she is today. Like many of us, Roma has experienced terrible loss and struggle in her life. But like the caterpillar that uses the darkness of the cocoon to transform into a butterfly, Roma has taken the darkness of life's challenges and, with God's help and grace, used those same trials to bring light into our world. Roma has, indeed, earned her wings. Roma came to America from Ireland with nothing but a prayerful heart full of hope and a mind full of dreams. She has had a wonderful career in Hollywood, but has remained strong in her faith and continues to glorify God by creating projects for Him. In this book, Roma shares stories about her journey, the trials and the triumphs, the joys and the sorrows. I am certain that her story, combined with the beautiful poetry and scripture she has selected, will inspire hope, restore broken faith, and remind us all that God loves us, that we are never alone. We are all connected, and our loving God and His angels are always standing by, watching over us. May this box of butterflies be a blessing to all of you, as Roma has been to me. God bless you, Della Reese.
I have decided. I have decided to find myself a home in the mountains, somewhere high up where one learns to live peacefully in the cold and silence. It's said that in such a place certain revelations may be discovered, that what the spirit reaches for may be eventually felt, if not exactly understood. Slowly, no doubt. I'm not talking about a vacation. Of course, at the same time, I mean to stay exactly where I am. Are you following me? Mary Oliver. Introduction. I love the poems of Mary Oliver, like the one you just heard, and you'll find a few scattered throughout this book. There's something about the beauty and honesty of her poems that echoes the prayers of my heart. She reminds me of this simplicity of faith, of how God's image is reflected in nature all around us, and that when we are quiet, when we connect to the stillness within ourselves, we can hear him speak. I hope that within this book you'll find moments like that. Moments when your heart flutters as it makes a connection. Like finally being able to recall a distant memory. Moments when you are filled with the relief of remembering that you are not alone and that God's loving presence is all around you. I've been a person of faith my whole life. I was raised in a household where it was always the right time for a prayer, where gratitude to God for his blessings was part of the everyday fabric of our lives. I lost my mother suddenly when I was only 10, and our faith became even more essential as my family leaned on each other and God to get us through that difficult and painful time. I remember the first time I went with my father to visit my mother's gravesite, not long after she passed. We'd brought some pansies to plant by her gravestone. My mother loved pansies. She used to say she thought they looked like little butterflies. As we stood there on the breezy hillside praying, a butterfly flew right in front of us, dancing on the wind. And my dad said, "Would you look at that? That wee butterfly could be your mother's spirit right there." As a young girl of 10, the idea that a beautiful butterfly could represent my precious mom gave me great comfort. I have always felt that the butterfly was a gift from God, a reminder of his loving presence. Since that day, butterflies have appeared to me throughout my life, bringing with them peace and reassurance. I always see them as a remembrance of my mother and a sign from God that even though we may feel so incredibly alone sometimes, he is always there. Now some people tell me, "Well, Roma, you live in California. It's sunny and your garden is full of flowers. So of course you see butterflies all the time." And while yes, that is true, I don't see only physical butterflies. Over the course of my life, I've seen butterflies appear in all sorts of unexpected places. A truck will drive by on a rainy city street with a butterfly painted on the side. Or in the midst of a long mountain drive, a butterfly will show up on a billboard, on a piece of jewelry in a store, or as a tattoo on a waitress's neck as we stop for some food. I can't explain it, but throughout my life, at the precise moments I need a sign of hope, I see a butterfly, and it always serves as a reminder of God's love and reassurance that I am not alone. If you visit my home, you'll see paintings of butterflies. Butterflies on mugs and napkins and pillows and more. Butterflies and angels with wings to fly. Because to me, the butterfly is not just a sign of God's presence, but also a symbol of the promise that we all hold within. A butterfly begins its life as a simple caterpillar, creeping and crawling along the ground. And yet that is just its beginning. Through the process of metamorphosis, through the patience and darkness of the cocoon, this little caterpillar emerges on the other side as a stunning butterfly, a creature with wings and the ability to fly. I once heard a story of a little boy who saw a cocoon and was so anxious to help the butterfly emerge that he got a small pair of manicure scissors so that he could help cut the butterfly out. What he didn't know was that it is through the process of emerging from the cocoon on its own that the butterfly gains the power to fly. It's the very struggle to push out of the cocoon that gives its wings their strength. Without that process, without the struggle, the butterfly isn't ready to fly, to soar. I know that this life can be filled with sorrow. We all experience loss and heartbreak, but oh, if we can just remember that in the struggle our wings become stronger. We can get through even the hardest times, and one day we will fly. We sometimes forget this. We think we will always be caterpillars crawling along the ground or bound in a cocoon. But we all hold the potential to become something else. There is always the chance for rebirth. One year for Valentine's Day, my husband Mark took me out to our patio, which overlooks the Pacific Ocean in Malibu, where we live. He handed me a large, exquisitely designed box with a fragrant gardenia on top. I was surprised by how light it was. I must have looked puzzled. Mark smiled and told me just to open it carefully. So I took the lid off gently, and out flew 50 butterflies. I gasped as I watched them ascend into the sky. My heart filled with joy and delight, and my eyes filled with tears. I turned to look at Mark, my heart overflowing with gratitude. My lovely husband had given me a box of butterflies. Knowing that for me, the butterfly is a sign of God's grace, God's presence. It was the dearest gift I could have received. It reminded me of the blessings of my life and the little lessons I have learned along the way. And so I decided to call this book Box of Butterflies. It is my prayer that every story in this book is a butterfly for you, a reminder that God is with you, that He will never leave you or forsake you, and that no matter how dark the cocoon may sometimes seem, there is always light on the other side. The struggle means your wings are growing and being strengthened. Have faith. There are angels watching over you. Back in 1994, I was an out-of-work actress looking for a job. I had been in Los Angeles for just over a year and was still waiting for my big break. To be honest, I had never really intended to come to LA and try to make it as a TV actress. I was classically trained in London and had moved to New York with my heart set on Broadway. My dream came true in the early 1990s when I was cast on Broadway alongside Sir Rex Harrison in a revival of Somerset Maugham's The Circle. Yet much to my surprise, some television producers saw my performance and called me in to read for an NBC miniseries called A Woman Named Jackie, a 6-hour film about the life of Jackie Kennedy. My agency sent me the script, and I read the first of 6 episodes. The material was compelling, but I didn't know what character they were thinking of for me. I called my agent to ask. He said with a laugh, "Well, the title role, of course." My jaw dropped. It was hard to imagine me, an Irish woman, playing this iconic American beauty. And yet, I booked the role, and the series went on to win the Emmy for Best Miniseries that year. On the heels of its success, I decided to pack my bags again and move to Hollywood to see what other TV or film opportunities might arise. The idea of moving to Los Angeles filled me with trepidation. I hardly knew anyone on the West Coast, and I did not even know how to drive a car. But I prayed and felt certain I should go. I decided I would try it out. If I did not like it, I could always go back to New York. I felt strongly that if I didn't give it a chance, I would always regret not having tried. So in spite of being afraid of what lay ahead, and with no certainty of outcome, I got on a plane at JFK and flew west. It was pilot season, that time of year when the hope that keeps all actors in this challenging profession rises, when you think that your next big break might be just around the corner, when you hope that the perfect special script with the perfect special role might just show up and change your life. I read through a number of scripts that my agent wanted me to consider, but none was terribly appealing. And then I picked up one with the working title, Angel's Attic, later to be retitled, Touched by an Angel. I felt a fluttering in my stomach. I knew immediately that this was something different. As I opened the packet and began to read, tears came to my eyes. This was the kind of material I had been looking for. The series told the story of angels who show up at crossroads in people's lives with a message of faith and love. The angels come to Earth to remind people that God loves them and hasn't forgotten them. I called my agent and told him that I wanted to come in to read for one of the roles. We booked a meeting, and a few days later, they called me in to be considered for the role of Monica, one of the lead angels. As I began preparing for the audition, I couldn't believe that this script presented me with an opportunity to play an angel and bring to life so many elements of the faith that I held dear. In addition, the two lead angels were women who shared an empathetic and loving relationship. Most of the scripts I was reading were about women in conflict, fighting over something or in competition with one another. But here were two women, two angels, who had so much love for each other. The story was inspirational and told of God's grace, not something that Hollywood or network television was necessarily known for. As I prepared for my audition, I realized that playing the role of Monica would require a compassionate heart. And I felt deep in my soul that I had been prepared for this role by the loss I had experienced in my own life. I knew that I could relate to the very people Monica was coming to visit, that I could meet those people in their places of loss and hurt, because I had felt loss and hurt so intensely myself at such a young age. I understood then that God had been preparing me, and I'd now been given the chance to turn my pain into purpose. When I went in to read for the part, I felt torn about how to approach my portrayal of Monica. I had, of course, worked on my American accent during the rehearsals for playing Jackie, but there was something within me that felt like the lyricism and musicality of my native Irish accent might be right for this special part of an angel. I knew it would be risky. It might cause me to lose the role. Once people hear my accent, it's often all they can hear, even when I'm speaking in an American accent. But I couldn't ignore this feeling. I walked into the room and read my lines, as I'm sure every other actress had read them, in an American accent. It seemed to go well. But then before I left the room, I turned around and cautiously asked if I could read it again. The producers nodded, perhaps a bit confused, and then I read Monica's lines in my native Irish brogue. The energy in the room changed immediately. Everyone in the room could feel it. Something clicked. As I left the audition, I thanked God for guiding me to listen to my instincts. Sure enough, I was called back for a screen test, and they requested that I read it again in my Irish accent. A few days later, I received a call from my agent. "I have good news and bad news," he said. "Good news first," I said. "You booked the show." "That's amazing," I said. "What's the bad news?" "If the pilot gets picked up, you have to move to Utah," he said. I laughed and said I thought I could handle that. I'd never been to Utah, but had heard it was beautiful. I was so thrilled with this opportunity, the chance to play Monica, and knew that my life was going to change in huge ways. Obviously, that pilot was an answer to prayer. It was a breakout moment for me and resulted in almost a decade of creating a beautiful show and being part of a cast and crew who truly became my family. But it became so much more than just my profession. Playing an angel for almost 10 years truly changed me. It touched my heart deeply and strengthened my faith as well. My favorite part of each episode was filming the scene we called the Angel Revelation. It came about 40 minutes into the show. Monica was an undercover angel, pretending to be a nurse or a doctor or a police officer, but she was truly there to help someone at an emotional crossroads. The moment always came when they broke down, feeling lost in the midst of their painful circumstances, before finally fully surrendering to God. They would cry out, "I cannot do this by myself. God help me." This was the central emotional heart of each episode. Monica would then reveal her true identity as an angel from Almighty God. She was a messenger, and the message was this: there is a God. He loves you, and he has a plan for your life. Before filming this scene, I would close my eyes, open my heart, and pray. It was an emotional moment to film, but it also filled me up, so much so that I would leave the set feeling as if God had just touched me personally. This was the moment that person opened his or her eyes and felt the truth he or she had forgotten, that he or she was a special child of a loving God, a child who was loved unconditionally, that God was always there, that he or she had never been alone, despite desperate feelings of loneliness. It was a moment of remembering. When we are caught up in the busyness of our lives, we forget our true role in this life. When we are wrapped up in worrying about the future or are stressed about something we did in the past, we do not feel God's peace. But if we can simply stop and be in the now, we can remember him. In remembering him, we come to a point of stillness and surrender. And it is in our stillness that God comes in. It is in the silence that we hear the whisper of his voice. It was such a privilege to bring that message of unconditional love to a nation full of viewers for so many years. And in some ways, that is what I'm trying to do in this book. I pray this book is a moment of remembering for you. A remembering of who you really are, how much God loves you, and that you are never, ever truly alone. Before we would film each scene of Revelation, we would pray as a cast and crew. My personal prayer was always, "Less of me, more of you." I pray that for this book as well. This is not about me or my life or even my faith. This is about how God has shown up in my life and how he can show up in yours. In this book, I'll share songs and prayers and poems that have kept me going in both the sunshine and shadows of my life. I'll share glimpses of God that I have found in the written word or in a particular image. And I pray that as you hear these words, you may remember, you may awaken, you may feel God's gentle presence, and that you then may go forward, knowing that the greatest shepherd, companion, and father is always by your side. For I am the Lord your God, who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, "Do not fear, I will help you." Isaiah 41:13, NIV. He did not say, "You shall not be tormented, you shall not be troubled, you shall not be grieved," but he said, "You shall not be overcome." Julian of Norwich. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Psalm 147:3, NIV. Chapter 1, Strength. Our wounds are often the openings into the best and most beautiful part of us. David Riccio. All my life I've been drawn to the ocean. I love the sound of the waves. The natural rhythm of the ebb and flow is like a massage for my mind and my spirit. I've always done my best thinking by the sea, and I often take my worries to the ocean's edge and quietly pray while I walk on the sand. There is something about the vast expanse of water that helps to put my troubles in proper perspective. In the grand scheme of things, all the concerns I have or deadlines I need to meet suddenly don't seem so critical. The scale of the ocean serves as a reminder of the magnificence of God and the smallness of the things I may be worrying about. As the waves crash in and out, they remind me that this too shall pass. It calms me and restores me. Sometimes I stand alone on the shore and sing at the top of my voice and see my footprints on the sand. With each wave that races to the beach, I watch them gently wash away. I did not grow up by the seaside, but Ireland is a small island surrounded on all sides by water. I grew up in the northwest, and many of my childhood summers were spent in Donegal. The ocean there is wilder than the Pacific, but even when it was cold, and it was often cold, I loved being near it and found it energizing. We would go to the little seaside town of Moville on day trips or family outings. And after a full day of playing on the beach or walking along the shore toward Greencastle, we'd end up having our evening meal at a nice family-run hotel. It felt so swanky to eat out and have a waiter serve us. I now have the good fortune to eat out regularly. But back then, this was a total luxury. My brother Lawrence and I would order steak and chips, and they would serve our ketchup in these little silver bowls. And as a special treat, we were allowed to order a bottle of Coca-Cola or Fanta Orange. We'd go home tired from all the sea air and meat and potatoes. When I look back on my childhood, I know it was a happy one. We lived in a tiny row house in a neighborhood filled with other children. It was a time when kids went out onto the streets to play. Boys had their own games, primarily soccer, while the girls would pass the time with hopscotch, using an old shoe polish tin as the marker, or throwing tennis balls against the drugstore wall to the beat of a variety of rhyming songs that all the girls would sing. When wet weather drove us indoors, we'd play paper dolls, or put on talent shows and play dress-up. All the games of imagination that ignited in me dreams of being an actress and living a different life. My mother loved the theater. In another life, she may have loved pursuing a career on the stage herself. It was from her that I developed my love of and passion for performing. With her encouragement, I took dance classes and music classes and singing classes, and elocution classes. Yes, elocution. She would come with me and sit off to the side of the classroom, urging me on with her love and her laughter and her enthusiasm. I adored her. She was warm, gregarious, and very funny. She would have made an excellent comic actress, like an Irish Lucille Ball. At bedtime, she would lie on top of the covers on my bed as the night slowly ushered in the darkness, singing show tunes to me as I fell asleep. Then, 1 week shy of my 11th birthday, my mother died of a heart attack. Her young, vibrant life was cut unexpectedly short, and my happy childhood abruptly ended. It happened on an ordinary day. My mother, brother, and I were walking from our row house to the library nearby. Without warning, my mother collapsed in the street. She was able to get back up and sit on the side of the road while my brother ran to the neighbor's house for help. They got their car and drove us home and helped my mother to her bed. Mom, not wanting her children to worry, kept trying to reassure us. Oh, I've just got a wee tummy ache. Don't worry, I'll be fine with a bit of rest. My father was summoned, as well as the doctor, and it was decided that she would go to the hospital for some tests. An ambulance arrived, but because our row house was so narrow, they couldn't fit a stretcher up the staircase to fetch her. So instead, my mother was carried down in a chair by four men. I remember her making jokes as they strapped her in and hoisted the chair, her humor making the men who carried her laugh. It is one of the last memories I have of her alive. My brother, father, and I were standing in the doorway of what we called the good room, and as she passed by, she looked at us, smiling, and said, "Don't worry, I'll see you soon. Lawrence, you take care of your sister until I get back. Roma, you take care of your da." We never saw her again. The next morning, a hush descended on the household as news spread that our mother was ill and various adults whispered as they entered and exited the house. The phone's constant ringing was the soundtrack to the tense morning. It was clear that something bad was going on. Pretty soon my brother and I were packed up to go to the hospital with my father. I was hopeful that we were going there to bring our mother home. We entered a waiting room, a room that I remember being defined by the loud tick-tock of the clock, echoing in the stressful silence. There we sat, my father, my brother, my mother's sister Ruby and her best friend Maureen, who shared the same name as my mom. Eventually a doctor came in and asked my father to step outside. And when my dad came back in, he was crying. I had never seen him cry before. "She's gone," he said, with a quiet sob. At first, I didn't understand. There's always a part of you that doesn't want to believe in the face of tragedy. But as I watched my father cry, I knew there was only one thing that could make him cry. My mother was dead. For me, it was like the lights had been turned out and all the color of life removed. She had been the joy in our home. She was the warm fire on a cold night. She was the cheerful word on a gloomy day. She was the center of my world. And then suddenly, in an instant, she was gone. No more mom sitting in the corner waiting for me. No more songs as I fell asleep. No more holding hands and running in the rain. I often say that my father was sadness in a suit after the loss of my mother. I know he felt her absence deeply. She had been so gregarious and joyful, and laughter came very easily to her, while my father was more reserved and even a little bit shy. Our entire household had to recalibrate after she was gone, and for a while we stumbled around in the dark, all of us grieving, unsure of the way forward. This was the second tragedy for my father. He had been married before, and his first wife had died, leaving him with four children under the age of 12 to raise on his own. He met and married my mother many years later, when his four children were grown and he had built another happy family, yet once again he found himself wearing the heavy mantle of widower, this time with two children under the age of 12. His now grown children did what they could to help, but they had lives and families of their own. Because of our age differences, they were more like aunts and uncles to me, but they tried to help us feel a sense of family in the wake of another tragic loss. They too knew what it was to grow up without a mother. My dad did his best to be not only a father, but a mother to us as well. He didn't sing me to sleep, but every night he would lie down beside me and read poetry to me before I went to sleep, and then he would turn out the lights and make the sound of the ocean to calm me in the slumber. I look back on this painful time and remember being so confused, How could my mother be so healthy and by my side one day and then gone the next? I worried that perhaps it was my fault. If I had somehow been more, she would have stayed. I strove to be a good girl, so scared that if I did something wrong, my dad would be taken as well. I remember riding home from the hospital in a taxi that horrible morning she died. I sat in the back seat with my brother, and my mother's best friend, whom we called Auntie Maureen, sat up front with the driver. It was a rainy, bleak day. I stared out the rain-flecked window, feeling so alone. And then I heard my aunt saying quietly to the driver, "My best friend Maureen O'Reilly just died. Those are her weigh-ins back there." It was the first time I had heard those words spoken out loud. Without looking at each other, my brother and I reached out across the back seat of the taxi and clasped each other's hands, knowing that our lives had been changed forever. That memory has stuck with me all these years, and to me that moment embodies the instinct we all have during difficult times. To reach out for someone's hand, to be reassured that no matter how painful life is, there is always someone to reach out to, a brother, a sister, a friend, or God. Because the truth is, though we may feel so alone, we are never truly alone. What I sometimes find astonishing is that the song my mother sang to me every night before I went to sleep is a song from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, Carousel. It is called, "You'll Never Walk Alone." When I was a child, listening to my mother's beautiful voice sing me to sleep, it reminded me that even after she put me to bed and closed the door and went down to the living room to be with my father, she was somehow still with me. And of course, after her death, that song came to symbolize so much more, that no matter where I am, she will always be with me. You'll never walk alone. When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of a lark. Walk on through the wind. Walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown. Walk on with hope in your heart, and you'll never walk alone. You'll never walk alone. Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein II. Even today as I read these words, my eyes fill with tears. What truth lies in these lyrics? Dark and stormy times will come, but when they do, we must keep walking through the wind and the rain, our eyes fixed on where we pray the golden sky will appear. This is the essence of faith, isn't it? To keep hold of the knowledge that this isn't the end, that there is a promise of heaven, that God can redeem even the most difficult circumstances. Shortly after my mother died, my father shared the poem Footprints with me. I have carried that poem in my wallet ever since. It talks about a person of faith looking back on her life and seeing two sets of footprints on the sand, representing that God has been by her side her entire life. But as the person looks closer, she notices that during the darkest times in her life, there is just one set of footprints. At first, she reaches out to God in anger. "How could you abandon me when I needed you most?" But God gently says, "No, my dear child, for it is then that I was carrying you." Throughout my life, I've found that it is in those very moments of darkness that God can come in. In the dark is when His light can shine the brightest. For when we are struggling, unable to hold it all together, is when we surrender. And that is when He can finally pick us up and carry us. Our glory is hidden in our pain if we allow God to bring the gift of Himself in our experience of it. Henri Nouwen. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely Your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Psalm 23. A message in the moon. When you walk to the edge of all the light you have and take that first step into the darkness of the unknown, you must believe one of two things will happen. There will be something solid for you to stand upon, or you will be taught how to fly. Patrick Overton. When I think of my father, I can see that throughout my life, he was always trying to give me wings so that I could go anywhere I wanted. He said over and over that my education would be my passport out and that I needed to work hard in school so I could go to college. He was always supportive and encouraging of my artistic desires, and when the time came to interview for college, he went with me and sat in the waiting area. As I was preparing to leave Ireland for school in England, I began to feel anxious. This was before the internet and cell phones, and to be so far away from my father with no way of immediately reaching him made me extremely nervous. One night, just a few days before I was scheduled to leave, he took me outside to the backyard. It was a clear night with a full moon, and he said, "Roma, wherever you are in the world, that moon will be shining on you. So whenever you feel alone, always look into the night sky and you'll be reminded of how much I love you. I'll leave a message for you in the moon." I hugged him, so grateful for his sweet gentleness and his constant care and attention. And as that first full moon ascended after I'd settled in England, I went outside and looked up at the moon, and I felt my dad's love. It was a great comfort. Since my mother had passed away, I had lived in fear that something might happen to Dad. If he was late coming home from work, or I came home to an empty house when I expected him to be there, I would get worried, so frightened that he too was gone. My father tried to reassure me in those moments, but also to strengthen me. I'll never forget something he said to me at a very young age. "Roma, remember that if you can bury your da, you can do anything. There won't be anything you can't do if you can bury your da." He knew that his death was my greatest fear. He also knew that day would come, and he wanted to strengthen me so that I would not fall apart in that moment, but be able to gather myself, to find the resources of strength within, and to know that he was by my side, always. Unfortunately, that day came sooner than I expected. My father died during my final year in drama school. In my deep grief, I was so worried that since his spirit had now gone from this earth, I would not be able to feel his love in the moon, that he would no longer be able to send messages, that I would see the moon and not feel his presence as I always had before. I was almost afraid to go outside and see. But I finally walked out to the very backyard where he had promised his moon messages. I looked up at the big, bright moon. And sure enough, I felt him, his quiet love, so silent yet strong. I picked up his message. Wherever you go in the world, Roma, the same moon will always be shining down on you. So never forget, no matter where you are, I will always be there, loving you. Tears streamed down my face as I felt his love so powerfully. The moon has been a beautiful comfort to me all these years, and I've now shared this message with my children. Even though we have the technology to be literally at each other's fingertips no matter how many miles may be between us, I sometimes text them when we're apart and say, "Go look at the moon. I left a message for you there." The moon, though it can shine so brightly, has no true light source of its own. It simply reflects the sun. I love the idea that when we send messages of love to the moon in return does what it does best. It reflects those messages to our loved ones. I like to imagine that the moonlight becomes love light. Throughout the journey of my life, these symbols have helped me feel close to my parents despite their early deaths. Butterflies for my mother, the moon for my father. Both, by extension, have always reminded me that though I sometimes feel alone, they are still with me in spirit. And of course, they remind me that I have another father who has also never left my side, my heavenly father. I've carried a longing for my parents in my heart for many years now. No matter how much I've grown, I still long for the touch of my mother's hand on my brow, the special cadence of her laugh, or my dad's quiet strength. I greatly miss their physical presence. There are moments when I think it's just so sad and unfair that I haven't been able to share the joys of my life with my parents. I know without a doubt that the course of my career would have delighted my mother, who loved the theater. And I know both my parents would have adored meeting my beautiful daughter, Riley. They would have been there for her birth and would have held their precious granddaughter in their arms and in their hearts. I know they would have loved meeting my husband, Mark, and the two fine sons, James and Cameron, whom he brought into my life. Of course, I've missed my parents every single day since their deaths, but my faith allows me to believe that one day all will be restored. Someday there will be a heavenly reunion. Someday I will see them again, and we will all walk hand in hand like we did all those years ago. For the truth is, we never walk alone. You can do the impossible because you have been through the unimaginable. Christina Rasmussen. Remember. Remember me when I am gone away, gone far away into the silent land, when you can no more hold me by the hand, nor I half turn to go, yet turning stay. Remember me when no more day by day you tell me of our future that you planned. Only remember me, you understand. It will be late to counsel then or pray. Yet if you should forget me for a while and afterwards remember, do not grieve. For if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once I had, better by far you should forget and smile, than that you should remember and be sad. Christina Georgina Rossetti. Death is nothing at all, it does not count. I have only slipped away into the next room, nothing has happened. Everything remains exactly as it was. I am I, and you are you, and the old life that we lived so fondly together is untouched, unchanged. Whatever we were to each other, that we are still. Call me by the old familiar name. Speak of me in the easy way which you always used. Put no difference into your tone. Wear no forced air of solemnity or sorrow. Laugh as we always laughed at the little jokes that we enjoyed together. Play, smile, think of me, pray for me. Let my name be ever the household word that it always was. Let it be spoken without an effort, without the ghost of a shadow upon it. Life means all that it ever meant. It is the same as it ever was. There is absolute and unbroken continuity. What is this death but a negligible accident? Why should I be out of mind because I am out of sight? I am but waiting for you, for an interval, somewhere very near, just round the corner. All is well. Nothing is hurt. Nothing is lost. One brief moment, and all will be as it was before. How we shall laugh at the trouble of parting when we meet again. Henry Scott Holland. My surrogate mother. It is not flesh and blood, but heart which makes us fathers and sons. Friedrich Schiller. I first met Della Reese on the set in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we were filming the pilot for Touched by an Angel. I had already gone through hair and makeup and even filmed a few scenes, but I was eager to meet this woman, this other angel, who would be my counterpart on the show. As I wrapped a scene, I heard that Miss Della Reese had arrived and was getting made up. I went back to the makeup trailer to finally meet her, and there she was, wearing bright and colorful clothing that was nothing compared to the luminous smile she wore on her face. She radiated love and warmth and joy. I walked up quietly, politely reaching out my hand and saying, "I just wanted to introduce myself." Della stood up and said, "Oh, baby, I don't shake hands, I hug." And she wrapped me in the biggest, most loving embrace I had ever experienced. It was love at first sight. We are an unlikely duo when you think of it. A tough-talking black singer from Detroit, Michigan, and a small, soft-spoken white woman from Ireland. But we hit it off right away, talking about our lives, the challenges we had faced, and our strong faith, which we both knew kept us going and definitely brought us together on this project. The chemistry that we so easily shared off-screen was very present in our relationship on-screen, and I know it enhanced the experience for the viewers. Della, like Tess, was the older, wiser, tougher angel, feisty and formidable, and fiercely protective of those she loves. And in the protective way that Tess loved Monica, Della came to love me. Now deep within me, there still lives a little girl longing for a mother. Since the age of nearly 11, I've been searching for that kind of tender, unconditional love that only a mother can give. And I found that in Della Reese. Soon we were always together on set. There's a lot of waiting between rehearsals and actual filming on a film set, so Della and I would meet in our trailers and play backgammon, share books, drink tea, and talk. When my daughter Riley was born, I chose Della to be her godmother, and at Riley's christening, Della lifted my precious baby girl heavenward and said, "As long as there is breath in my body, I will always stand up for this child." I can honestly say that there is absolutely no safer place in the world than in the arms of Della Reese. Della and I share a love that is deeper than friendship. She became my family that very first day. I truly felt as if I'd known her all my life. She's become the first person I call when I need wisdom, and she's a loving teacher and instructor. A few years later, I was on the Touched by an Angel set in Salt Lake City, rehearsing the angel revelation scene, when I heard a commotion offstage. And then someone rushed up to me and said, "Roma, you must go see Della immediately. She needs you." I quickly ran to Della's trailer, where I found her crying and incoherent, struggling to take off her angel costume and get changed into her regular clothes. I tried to calm her down and get a sense of what was going on. Della was clearly distraught and overwhelmed with grief. Something terrible had happened. "She's gone, she's gone," she cried out as she collapsed into my arms. I managed to piece together that Della's only daughter had died. I hardly knew what to do, but I did know that Della needed to get home to Los Angeles. I helped get her dressed, and then we rushed into a waiting car to head to the Salt Lake City airport. As we were pulling away, I rolled down the window and called out to an assistant, "Please have someone grab my purse and some shoes and bring them to the airport." I'd hardly even noticed that I was still in my white angel costume, with no shoes on my feet. Della looked at me and said, "No, baby, you need to stay. Riley needs you here." But I brushed aside her concern, now being the strong one in the relationship. "No, I'm coming with you," I said firmly. Della looked at me sadly and took my hand in hers. "I don't want to talk," she said quietly as she turned to gaze out the window. "That's okay," I said. "I won't say a word. I'll just be here with you the whole way, holding your hand." When we got to the airport, I purchased tickets for the flight back to LA and met my assistant, Linda, who had brought me my purse, my ID, and a pair of shoes. We somehow made it through security and onto the plane without too much fuss. Della is such a recognizable person, but I knew that now was not the time to deal with requests for autographs. I was a guard dog, protecting my mama. No one would bother her. I would keep her safe until I got her home and into the loving arms of her husband, Franklin. There was a moment during the flight when Della finally fell asleep and I could feel the tension leave her body. I silently prayed that she could rest a bit before having to wake up and deal with the reality of this heartbreak. But after only a few moments, she jolted and awoke, and I could feel the remembering take place in her body. I squeezed her hand. My heart was breaking for her, and I silently prayed that God would give her strength and comfort. When we arrived in LA, I walked Della down the jetway to the gate, where Franklin was waiting. "Daddy," she said, which was what she called him, and she was enveloped in his embrace. I sat down in a nearby chair, wanting to give them privacy in this deep moment of grief, knowing that my job was done. I hadn't wanted her to be alone in her pain, and now she was with her beloved, and she could go home and begin the grieving process. I didn't have anywhere to stay, and hadn't packed anything for the trip, and I had planned to fly back home to Utah to be with my Riley, but the last flight back had already left. I sat down, unsure what to do, and then I saw a familiar face. It was Martha Williamson, the executive producer of Touched by an Angel. She walked up to me and said, "Is it just you here by yourself?" And I said, "Yes, Della has gone home with Franklin." Martha smiled. "Well, I just had a feeling I needed to come and be here for one of my angels. I thought it was Della I came for, but now I guess I'm here for you." So I went home with her and flew back to Utah the next day. A few months later, Della and I were back in Los Angeles taking a walk on the beach together. "Looking out on the beauty of the ocean," Della said, "God is wonderful, isn't he?" I nodded in agreement, grateful that she could still feel his goodness in this dark time in her life.
But really, baby, she continued, I did not know until now just how wonderful he is. You see, he brought